Welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I am your host, Dustin Albino. Today I am joined by my colleagues at frontstretch.com, Mike Neff and Zach Atanzaretti, as we are here to break down a wild weekend in Bristol. Now guys, this race became a 26-hour marathon in Bristol with four red flags in the opening 206 laps, three of which were due to rain. Zach, I know you were at the race and in attendance, but Mike, you and I weren't. So man, this was an awesome race overall, but it was awfully challenging to keep up with everything that was going on, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, there was no doubt about it. The whole weekend was kind of a throwback to old Bristol. I don't know if it was the tire, if it was the compound, if it was the temperature, if it was all three. But whatever the case was, it seemed like the VH1, PJ1, whatever that stuff's called now that they put down track tack, whatever it was, it didn't seem to really wear off. And so throughout the race, from the fits and starts of the weather and the incidents, whatever the case may be, the bottom groove remained the predominant groove. And so it was more old Bristol. You actually had to bump and run people to move out. And then finally, when we got to Monday, they put down another coating of it before things started. And it went all the way up till about 100 to go. And then it seemed like that upper groove started to come in a little. But even with that, when it came down to it on whatever it was, lap 494, six laps to go, I believe it was, Busch still had to go to the bottom and do a bump and run to get Larson out of the way to grab the win. So it was fantastic racing. If you didn't like that with everything that was thrown into it, I don't know what else we can do to entertain you.
Yeah, we've seen that a couple times this year, like the Phoenix race. Phoenix is usually, I guess, an ISM race, we know. But typically, that's not a good race. And this year, it was a hell of a race. Probably the best Phoenix race in a long time. I think the same could be said for Bristol, Zach. It was one hell of a race you got to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. I really enjoyed it. Even being there in person, shooting in the turns, I mean, you're really able to take in a lot of action there. And I mean, I always said it's almost impossible to have a race entertaining from start to finish. Like, you're always going to have those moments where there's a little bit of a lull. And I really don't feel like we had any lulls. I mean, obviously, the rain helped kind of breaking the race up, broken in the halves almost from Sunday to Monday, but I mean, I absolutely enjoyed, as Mike said, the bottom seemed to be the preferred way almost the whole weekend, and that's really what we were looking for. I know Elliott Sadler spoke after the race on Saturday, the Xfinity race, and someone like him I try to listen to because he's not only did he watch the old Bristol, but he actually raced on it, so he knows about it much more than most of us will, and he said that it's exactly like the old Bristol. It's a lot like it, just how you race, just the intensity from inside the cockpit on how you have to tackle that track and how you have to race around other people. And that got me excited for the cup race, and I really wasn't disappointed.
Yeah, and Mike, like you said, it took a bump and run to get Kyle Busch the victory over Kyle Larson, who led a race high on 200 laps. Mike, Larson had a crazy race. You know, he got to the lead, dropped back, got to the lead again, spun out off the front of Newman's bumper. What a heartbreak, though, wouldn't you say?
I mean, it's Bristol. I think he kind of had a feeling it was coming. If you watched most of the race, especially on Monday, Kyle Busch was less than spectacular after restarts. And 20 to 30 laps into a run, his car really kind of took off. And especially 40 to 50 laps, he kind of was the class of the field. So I think when they came in there with the last pit stop they had with 20-something laps to go, I think that Andrews made an adjustment on it, put a little more air in the tires so that they came in a little bit quicker. And sure enough, with eight, maybe nine laps to go, his car really took off. He got to the back bumper of Larson, moved him. I mean, sure, it's frustrating for Larson. It was still Larson's best finish ever at Bristol. He's had a couple seconds in the Xfinity to Busch, but that was the first time he ever made it up to runner-up in the Cup side. So it's his win's coming there. There's no question that track suits his style very much. I was actually surprised to not see him ever go up top. Busch went up there a little bit and made some hay, but Larson stuck to the bottom the entire race. But if you were watching the race, I think Larson even knew that he was going to come. It was just a matter of if he was going to be able to hold him off, and the way it worked out with six to go, he couldn't hold him off anymore.
But Zach, like Mike said, Larson's finished second to Busch a few times next week, I think three or four at Bristol alone. And obviously another runner-up finish this past weekend. So it's got to get a bit frustrated to see that, you know, you can't beat the one guy that you got to beat.
Oh, absolutely. And we saw on both days, and as was pointed out there, that Kyle Busch just had just a better, slightly longer run call. It didn't take too long, maybe 20, 30 laps. But if you were to restart on the bottom, I mean, you would chump me going into turn one. I mean, like second place would end up going back to fourth or fifth, it seemed like. And if you were restarting sixth, you could have been up into third spot. So that definitely affected the 18 a little bit on the get-go. But once he, I mean, if I were to pick a guy to be in the second place, Kyle Busch is the guy. Not even at Bristol, just anywhere else. You put him in the second. I mean, it's they say shark when they see blood in the water. That's really what I see in that 18. And it was interesting with Larson, seeing how strong he was all weekend, everything he had to overcome. And yeah, I was surprised he didn't try the outside lane as much as I kind of anticipated him doing. Because in practice, I was shooting and all the guys were going by using the inside lane. And then that one guy going up, and he would be right on top of the PJ1. Right on the outside was Larson and Stenhouse and our guy from last week, Coy LaJoy. He was trying that outside a little bit in practice. And just during the race, we didn't see as much as that from the 42. So I think that really shows how important that inside lane was if a guy like him was really nailed down to it all day.
Can we please try to figure out why we can't have a juice cone in the Cup Series? We saw it again this weekend. One lane is just so superior than the other on restarts. Why we can't have the quote-unquote best drivers in the world in stock cars come to the start-finish line and decide if they want to start on the inside or the outside. They do it every week at racetracks across the country, and yet somehow it's just too complicated for the best guys in the world to pull it off. I don't understand
that. Yeah, I forget where I heard this, but I heard on a podcast either late last year, but I think it was earlier this year. I think it was Denny Hamlin who mentioned that the Drivers' Council is trying to go in that direction. But yeah, I agree, Mike. It's about damn time that something like that's in place.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
But guys, you both mentioned how Kyle Busch, it took 20, 30 laps for his car to come in. But I don't know if I've ever seen a car look that evil for the first 20 or 30 laps of a run. That car was, it just went off the track and it looked loose as hell and he was barely hanging on. Honestly, I'm surprised he had enough time to get back to the front because, I mean, Larson was in a league of his own for much of that race.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know. If you wanted the car to be good on the long run, it had to start loose. And if you're going to make a car super loose, there's a handful of guys in the garage that are going to be able to handle it. Jimmy Johnson's definitely one of them, and Kyle Busch is definitely one of them. And it had to be that loose to be that good at the end of the run, and that was the way it worked out.
Yeah,
you definitely needed a little bit more of an aggressive driver at a track. We saw it at Texas, completely different, but again, you're fighting for that one lane on the bottom, and you just have to be such an aggressive driver. And when you lose track position, you have to have that extra ambition to get by those guys. And Kyle, obviously, we all know that he has plenty of that.
Yeah, Kyle right now he's got a 52-point lead on second place in the championship standings. Six straight top three finishes through the first opening eight races. Guys, I know Kevin Harvick has three victories. Kyle Busch has two, but I'm gonna give you guys an option. If you could take one driver right now going forward, Kyle Busch or Kevin Harvick, Zach?
This stuff changes so quick. I picked Denny as my champion to start the year, but yeah, he hasn't been.
I pick Kyle.
You pick Kyle. I pick Kyle. But I'm gonna pick Kyle for this one. Yeah.
Mike.
I'm gonna take Kyle, just because of. Track record for the year. I think he's across the board been running better. We've been talking about it on this podcast all season long that the Toyotas were going to get there. They've been getting there over the last handful of races, and now I think they're almost on par with the Fords. So when it comes down to it, you know, the Toyota camp tends to dump more money into this stuff than the other two manufacturers. And I feel like Toyota will continue to get after it, continue to make their cars better. And by the time we get to the playoffs, I think the Toyotas, once again, will be the cars to beat.
Yeah, I think Toyota as a whole is getting better and better every race. Even guys who got off to, you know, terrible starts, to be honest with you, like Daniel Suarez, he's getting better. I think he's got 11th last week, if I'm not mistaken. And the week before that, he was running well. He was fast all weekend and then crashed, I think, the second lap of the race at Texas. But you know, Denny Hamlin's been fast all year, but they can't get out of their own way on pit road, unfortunately. Eric Jones, he's been quick this past week. I was kind of disappointed, but they had a loose wheel, which, speaking of which, Neff, drivers went off on NASCAR this weekend for the pit guns.
Yeah. I don't know why they're surprised or shocked or whatever. It's we've been dealing with it all season, and it's continuing to get better, but it's not getting fixed. And I will be stunned if they make a change before the end of the season, but I also wouldn't be surprised to see them switch over and go to the Thunder Gun just because the Thunder Gun was the standard, and I think the out-of-the-box Thunder Gun is a proven hit gun, impact gun, air wrench, whatever you want to call it, with a track record that it can run and it can do the job for an extended period of time without failures. And the way these things are working with these Paoli guns, it just doesn't seem like they can go very long without needing to be rebuilt to remain at the level that they need to be. And so I feel like the Paoli guys are going to continue working at it and continue getting it better. It's just a matter of the how much NASCAR wants to spin the PR on this to be willing to take the black eyes. Because we've had at least two now and possibly four races that have been taken away from race teams because of gun failures. And when you start getting to a NASCAR-issued piece of equipment that is resulting in teams losing races, that is a very bad look.
Yeah, Zach, Denny Hamlin said something like, no other professional sport has malfunctions due to with their equipment. And then Kurt Busch, he called out NASCAR pretty badly on his, I think it was Instagram, where he said he got caught three laps down because of a stupid pit gun.
Yeah, I saw that. And yeah, obviously, I mean, you look at football or baseball, they're not nowhere near as technical as NASCAR because you're not using race cars. You're using balls and sticks and all this stuff. So yeah, that was an interesting point. But I don't want to undermine when drivers start speaking out. I mean, we saw it with the lug nuts, you know, with Biffle and what Tony said a few years ago on just how dangerous those were getting and all that stuff. And changes made mid-season, I mean, it was quick. So I personally wouldn't be surprised if a change is made mid-season. I mean, I agree with Mike. I absolutely think it's a work in progress. I think it is getting better, but it's a big black eye when not only when races are decided by it, but when the drivers get out and they just start browbeating whoever they think is involved in it.
And some of your top veterans, too, of course. I mean, yeah. Kevin Harvick earlier in the year had a problem with it. Another veteran, though, Jimmy Johnson, guys. Best run of the season this past week. He was fast all week and long finished third. Guys, I looked at his stats, and this is his first top five in 15 races, dating back to Dover last October. And just the second in the past 31 races, and that 31st race was also at Dover. So this last top five, other than at Dover, was this race last year at Bristol. That's astonishing.
I thought he had a win at Dover last spring.
He did. He did, but top five.
Okay, so wouldn't a win be better than a top five?
For sure, but I'm saying that he only had two top fives since that Dover race, being Dover and then the fall Dover.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, there's no question they have been out to lunch since about Dover last spring. I mean, all summer they were bad, and even in the fall they were bad, and they've come out of the box this year being bad. So and I get a kick out of how he's talking about it's hard to do this at this professional level and be competitive. And I'm like, yeah, but it's also hard to win seven championships. It's only happened three times. So somebody that's capable of doing that should not be running like a bag of hammers most of the time they're on a track this year. So yeah, I mean I understand that the Chevy camp has been struggling, especially Hendrick. And they're figuring it out. But at the same time, you call a spade. And he has not been running at the level that they should be running. Even if Hendrick is out to lunch, the best car of a team that is out to lunch should be your seven times champ. It shouldn't be rookies or one-year drivers. And it has been for the last year and a half. So he had a good run. I'm not ready to just wash my hands and say, oh, yeah, Hendrick's ready to go now, because we're dealing with short tracks, and Richmond's another short track. When we get to Kansas, if he runs top five at Kansas and leads some laps and contends for a win, then I'll be ready to say, oh, yeah, they've got it figured out. Till then, I'm not jumping on the 48 bandwagon with both feet.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I always look at short tracks, not as much as plate racing, because a lot more driver technique comes involved with short tracks. But yeah, I really like to see that speed lead over into a Kansas or a Charlotte and stuff like that. I mean, yeah, Monday was a breath of fresh air for sure, not only for Jimmy, but for Hendrick overall and Chevy. I mean, Larson did great. Even Bubba Wallace showed some solid speed, probably the best he's shown all year. So a lot of positivity comes out of a race like that. But yeah, for sure, I don't put them into. They're not really in a separate basket for me after this weekend. I mean, they've shown that the potential is there, but just what they can make out of this. Can they really build this momentum and actually run with it, or was that just a fluke? I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I'm shocked that now we've completed eight races. I don't know how many laps. A ton of laps, and he's yet to lead one. His year's gone so bad that this weekend he got the lead on one lap, but then lost it on the same lap.
Yeah. That was like a big deal on TV. It was like, oh, Jimmy's leading. He's going to lead his first lap. Oh, no.
Now, guys, I want to talk about Ricky Stenhouse Jr. because, I'll be honest, just like we do predictions here, my family does predictions, and this past weekend my mom's like, who should I pick this weekend for Bristol? And I'm like, well, maybe Ricky Stenhouse Jr. And she's like, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., he's had an awful year. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, he does well at Bristol. So, Zach. But, Mike, I'll go right to you then. Why does his driving style fit this track?
Because he's a dirt track racer. And, I mean, it's that kind of a track where you're laying it on the right rear, driving it more with your foot than you are with the steering wheel. And when you're at Bristol, that's kind of what you're doing. And he knows what feeling he needs to be fast at Bristol, and he has been able to get it in the car no matter what rules package they've thrown at it. And so it happened again this weekend. I mean, they had one little stretch there where they kind of screwed up and it cost him a little bit, but he still had a great run. And I mean, it's Ricky. Ricky can be running absolutely horribly everywhere, but he will always have at least two good runs a year, and it's both Bristol races, because no matter what happens, he's always up in the top 10 when he gets to Bristol.
And he honestly had a shot for the win late in the go, and he could have bumped Larson out of the way. And that would have been interesting, since they're best friends off the track.
Yeah,
that would have been fun.
Yeah, when I saw him up in second, I saw Larson and Stenhouse. I'm like, I'm not surprised at all, but holy crap, let's see what happens here, because Stenhouse can desperately use this win. And yeah, I wasn't surprised at all when they were running 1-2. I mean, just as Mike said, that dirt background, it really pays dividends at a track like Bristol. And yeah, I think a third of his top fives in his career have come at Bristol, and I guess most of the others are at Daytona and Talladega. So it's really cool when you figure out where someone's strong suit is, and they go and they take advantage of it. And he almost always steps up to the plate when we go to his strong suit. So it wasn't a win. I mean, that team could have really used one, as I said. But a top five, very similar to Jimmy. I'm just really interested to see what they can do with it moving forward.
Yeah, equipment doesn't seem to matter. So, we know this so much at the short track, especially at Bristol, because there's a lot of surprises this past weekend. We mentioned earlier how Bubba Wallace went up there and grabbed the lead. Ryan Blaney led 99 laps, which he doesn't typically do well at Bristol. Guys, Front Row Motorsports was fast all week. David Reagan finished 12th, and he was quickest in happy hour. Michael McDowell started in the top 10. I'll ask this to you, Zach, first. Who were you most surprised with this past weekend at Bristol?
There's quite a few. Yeah, you mentioned Front Row, and just even before the race started, I was impressed. But yeah, I have to go with Bubba Wallace. I watched his video after the race on how just perplexed he was on how he finished, what, 16th or so. And I mean, I feel like he certainly had a top 10 car at least, and he just fell off right there at the end. And at a track at a half mile like that, before you know it, if you're off for a stint, you're a lap down. And that's where he finished, one lap down. And it was super impressive to see him lead laps, his first ever, the first from an African-American, and you know, 50-60 years. So that was cool to see a little bit of history. And yeah, to see him finish 16th and be not only disappointed, but just completely confused on how the race went away, and it's still a 16th, I mean, that's pretty good. So a really strong run for him. I didn't really expect that at a track like that. So yeah, overall, he would be my top guy I would choose.
I was a little more surprised than David Reagan. I mean, I went back for my column this weekend, and it went all the way back to 2015. Martinsville in the spring, I believe it was. Reagan came home in sixth. That was his last time he had a top 10 that was not on a plate track. We all know that Reagan can run plate races fine, but that was the last time on a non-plate track he managed to come home with a top 10. So that's a long time going in the neighborhood of 3 years without a finish like that. And in reality, it hadn't been close. I mean, it's, you look back through it, most of those finishes are 20s and 30s. It's not like he's coming in 14th and 15th and just knocking on the door and not getting it done. So the fact that he was able to knock out a 12th place run, I mean, it's not top 10, but it's right there. For those guys, that was definitely an impressive run, I thought.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's hard to pick a more impressive, honestly, because Bubba, I think he earned the respect of a lot of the former champions of the sport. He went up and passed Brad Keselowski, Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Busch, late in the going of less than 100 laps to go to get that lead. And yeah, like you said, Zach, he fell back to 16th. But then when you talk about David Reagan, I looked at some of his stats after the race on Monday, and he's on a little bit of a hot streak for front row standards. They've got 7 straight top 25 finishes, which, like I said, for front row standards, that's pretty good. And that's the first time he's done that since 2015 as well. So I think it's baby steps for each of these teams. I think Bubba's and he's impressed me quite a bit this year so far. Even with some of the bad runs he's had, I think he's ran well at other tracks like this past weekend. He ran well at Martinsville, Daytona, obviously. So, guys, we're now, what, almost a third of the way through the regular season. I know I just asked you who your biggest surprise was for this past weekend, but what about the year so far, Zach?
I don't know. I mean, there's definitely been a few. I've really been looking at the Ford camp, and Ryan Blaney was one guy. I didn't really expect him to bust out of the Penske trio there. Clint Boyer has been quicker than I expected. I mean, just Martinsville overall was just one of the biggest shockers I've seen, just with how he, not just that he won in more than 5.5 years or so, but he completely annihilated the last half of the race. And but yeah, I'd have to probably put it towards Blaney. I'm surprised he hasn't won. I believe he's dominated 3 races now, Bristol, Martinsville, Daytona, and he seems to really have a knack for those big races as well. So yeah, I'd have to put it towards Blaney. There's quite a few out there, but off the top of my head, for him to come in officially with the team, not just an affiliate, and to be doing better than his veteran teammates, probably put the nod to him.
Mike?
I'm looking at, as a team, obviously Stuart Haas Racing coming out and just being heads and shoulders above just about everybody. If you look at it as a team, I mean, the 4 cars week in and week out are fast, are competing. And as an individual, I'm going to throw Eric Almirola out there. I know he's part of the Stuart Haas Brigade. He's had a couple tough shots. Finished a third of a lap away from winning the Daytona 500. But he's sitting 11th in points. I mean, that is saying something. He's definitely in the mix and has had some lousy luck from just being caught up in other people's messes. And I think that has hurt him a little bit. But I think I said it at the beginning of the year, he's going to win before the playoffs get here, and I still do. And then the other one to look at is Alex Bowman. We've talked about Hendrick's challenges and the fact that they are struggling. He is the only Hendrick car that is eligible for the playoffs at this moment, and he's 13th. It's not like he's sitting in 16th. He's led 13 laps this year. He's been in a conversation at a couple different races. So I think he's accorded himself well in 88 so far in 2018.
Yeah, Mike, I agree with you. I think Almirola is the biggest surprise for me. Finished 6th this past weekend at Bristol. He's got 3 top 10s this year. Last year, the 10th car only had 1 top 10. It's only had 3 top... I don't think it's had 3 top 10s since 2015 or so. Like, 2015 to 2017 total. So, yeah, he's given that car a hell of a drive this year. Zach, you're right. Blaney's... He surprised me quite a bit this year. I knew he was going to be fast, but not this fast. And I think a win's right around the corner for him. Mike, I agree. I think Almirola will probably win. I know you said you picked him to win at least one of the plate tracks. I think he'll win Talladega.
You would think that, I mean, I think he's going to be in the mix for sure. I like him at Daytona just because he's done well at Daytona in the past, and I feel like that that Stuart Haas has got the package for down there. It's a little bit different because Daytona requires a little more handling, where Talladega's a little bit more of the horsepower. That's why I kind of lean to Penske on that, because they seem to just show that little bit more horsepower-wise. But it's going to be hard to pick against any Ford winning at Talladega.
Now, quickly, guys, I want to go biggest disappointment of the year. I'm going to throw one name out, because prior to the season, I think it was in December, early January, SiriusXM had a poll of what do you think is going to be the biggest, like, standout this year? Bold prediction. And I said Chase Elliott would lead the series and wins. I am wrong on that.
No.
It's been, they just keep shooting themselves in the foot. They've had 2 25-point penalties, I believe, right? And then this past weekend, they got in a crash early on. They've got 2 finishes outside the top 30. Zach, what's going on?
No clue. No, at all. I would definitely be hired by the 9 team if I said something right now that was worth anything. Yeah, I have no idea. And yeah, as you said about those point penalties, I mean, you're taking a car that's struggling with speed to begin with, and now you're just plummeting it in points. So that's what, 50 or so points back of where he would be. And he's not, I mean, he's not really at the area where you have to win to make the playoffs, but I mean, he's super, super low down there. And yeah, for sure. I probably didn't have him as the winning leader, but I definitely expected him to finally get that win this year, if not multiple. And he's always done great with top 10s and top 5s, and he's led so many laps, and we just haven't seen that at all this year. And Chase is definitely one for me. Eric Jones as well. I expected Denny to be the champion and Kyle to do tremendous, but I expected Eric to be right there with him. And through these first 8 races, he's doing okay in the top 10, but he hasn't had enough races where I expected him to be a front runner. Especially those two, I expected them to be contending for top 5s at least weekly, and they're just not showing it so far.
I'm going to throw up the flag on Daniel Suarez. Obviously the Toyotas struggled a little bit out of the box, but they're coming around now. But, I mean, Eric Jones is 12th in points. Denny Hamlin's 8th. Kyle Busch is leading the points. Busch has got 6 top 5 finishes. What's Hamlin got? Hamlin's got 3. Eric Jones has got 4 top 10s in a top 5. And you get to Suarez, and he's got 1 top 10. I say that because I'm surprised. When Suarez came in and in the Xfinity Series, every time they went from a track and came back to it, he got better. Any time he's seemed as though when he goes back through and learns from something, he gets better. So I expected him when he came in this year to be stronger and contending for wins and being up in the mix of this thing. And it's just been a slump this year, and I can't explain it. I feel like that I still, in looking at the young guns in the sport, I think of the ones who haven't won, he's probably 3rd or 4th on the list that will probably win before the year is over. But right now, they're 24th in points, and I'm not really feeling it.
Yeah, and speaking of JGR, because you hit on JGR there, I want to move to the Xfinity Series now. Neff, was it you last week, or was it Corey that predicted Ryan Preece to win Bristol?
I lost you for some reason. Can you try that again?
Yeah, sure. Last week, was it you or Corey that picked Ryan Preece to win at Bristol?
I picked Ryan Preece, and Corey agreed with me that was a good pick. I also picked Kyle Busch to win, I do believe. I may be mistaken,
but
I'm pretty sure I had a really good week in the old predictions on the Front Stretch podcast. But yeah, I definitely picked Preece. I was kind of hoping that they were going to figure out a way to stick him in the car this coming weekend.
Yeah, what a story.
Since they're going to have the Dash for Cash thing going, and unfortunately, they didn't figure out a way to get him back in a car, so that's kind of a bummer. I just hope somebody's going to give him a ride.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what else you can do to prove your worth. It's that whole mindset of the sport now that owners expect you to bring money, and we don't really have We have some rare exceptions to it, but we don't have a lot of instances where owners are going out and finding money to put a driver in a car. But if anybody has proven that they deserve a shot to be in quality equipment and have an owner go find them a ride to put them in, I think Ryan Preece deserves it.
I agree with that 100%. I mean, he ran, what, a handful of races with JGR last year, and he was only scheduled to run, what, two or three? But then winning at Iowa got him a couple more races. This year he's running 10. So I think it's pretty cool to see a true short track racer get to victory lane at Bristol. But, yeah, unfortunately, money buys rides. So he's out of luck, but he's got $100,000 for that going forward. So
there you go.
Yeah, and he was very happy when he was asked in the media set afterwards, oh, man, you don't have a ride for next week. You can't go for an extra grant. He held up that check in his hand. Like, I got $100,000. I can pay everybody back. I'm happy. So it was super cool to see him win. I showed Dustin after the race. He's tied with Michael Annette in points, which is pretty remarkable. He's only done three races this
That's
year.
That's insane.
So it's insane. It just shows you not – it shows you a few things, but it shows you how talented Preece is. He's a huge fan favorite. You just feel it. Every time he's behind the wheel of that car – just everyone who loves short track racing, who loves those grassroots feelings and all that stuff, it comes up on a short track. But when you got someone like him behind the wheel of a championship-winning organization car, finally after years, he did it a little bit last year, and now he's back here, and he's able to win. I mean, that was a beautiful day.
Yeah, to put it in layman's terms, he's ran three races, and obviously there's been seven races. Michael Annette's run all seven for Junior Motorsports. Junior Motorsports is the top Xfinity Series team. Organization, we should say. And he's tied with him in points, and he's 15th in points, and he's only like 30 points out of the top 12. So every time he gets in the car, he's running towards the front, winning races, and yeah, that dude deserves a ride, but like I said, unfortunately, money buys rides. But I was also surprised, Zach, with Brandon Jones this past week. What he led, I think, 106 laps?
Oh, yeah, absolutely insane. I mean, that's the reason we asked him after the race, and he said that's the reason why I came to Joe Gibbs. And, like, we didn't see any of it, not even close to this last year, and even the year before that with RCR. And I know for a lot of people, this was the year, the deciding year, on what we were going to think of Brandon Jones. I mean, what can he do in this ride? And it's definitely been a solid year for him. He was great at Texas. He got a stage win there before he wrecked out a little bit. And, man, to see him lead all those laps, more than a third of the race, and to have the race win in his pocket before that last terrific win if he was able to get it, but just that last restart and the pit stop, and he just lost it, and he wasn't even able to get a top five. Unfortunately, he hasn't had one in I think 3 years, since back when he just started in Xfinity. So he's got some stuff to work on, I guess, but definitely has the team behind him. And when I get to see runs like that, it shows me that he's a good driver. I mean, he knows what he's doing out there. He's learning how these cars drive, and it's cool to see that, because when you get a guy who's in a ride like that, you want to see him perform. And I think we're definitely in for a solid year from him, and I think we can actually see him win possibly a couple of races this year.
Yeah, I talked to him before Daytona. I think it was Friday, so the day before the opening race for Xfinity Series. And he said, you know, for sure this was a make-or-break season, kind of, because he's in the best equipment, arguably, in the Xfinity Series. And, I mean, like you said, Zach, he won a stage at Texas. I think he finished second in the first stage there. And then leading 106 laps, I mean, that's not too shabby. So, I don't know. I'm not looking at the Xfinity Series points right now, but he's got to be pretty high up in the points. But, Mike, what have you taken on Brandon so far in Xfinity with the Gibbs?
Yeah, I agree. He's got a shot this year. He's run in the series for a little while. He's had some flashes, but hasn't had the consistency that he needed to prove that he belonged. And now, like you, arguably the best equipment in the sport, it's make it or break it, put up or shut up. And so far he's putting up. So it's now up to him to win a race or two, and then we'll see what happens when the playoffs get here. One other funny quick point. How hilarious was it when they're talking to Ryan Preece before the race starts, and he has to tell him that, yeah, these cars, I have to kind of slow myself down because they're so much slower than a modified going around Bristol. I thought that was hilarious. He's like, yeah, I'm used to going about a second faster around here than I am in these things. I have to kind of slow myself down to be able to drive these.
Well, at least he's honest.
He wins the race.
Now, guys, we got two races this weekend, doubleheader Friday, Saturday night. First night races of the year, Zach. You and I will be there. Neff, I'll start with you. Give me your predictions for the Xfinity race and then the Cup Series race.
Oh, predictions for Xfinity and Cup. You know, I'm going to go with Christopher Bell. He was fast as crap at Bristol and just stepped on himself and kind of ended his day way earlier than he should have with that brake issue coming up on that wreck. And feel like he's going to redeem himself and give him a run at Richmond Raceway. I believe we are now. I got to remember the name of it because it's changed it so many times. On the Cup side, I'm riding this pony till I'm told not to. We've seen him win there before. I'm going with Kyle Busch again because it's Richmond and he knows how to drive fast there. In the spring, he always has trouble there in the fall, but the spring race, Kyle Busch is the king at Richmond.
Zach?
Yeah, for me, I'm going to go with Justin Allgaier. I know we pick him quite a bit, but he doesn't win too much. But I think one of the races that he should have won was last year. He completely dominated that race. My opinion, one of the maybe the best race he's ever had in his whole career. And it came in this race last year. And I think he ended up winning the Dash for Cash, but he was the most disappointed person I've ever seen holding a check for $100,000. And he knew that. So, yeah, I'd say he redeems himself. He gets that win. And then another guy's going to redeem himself on Saturday, and that's Joey Logano. This was the place that killed him twice last year. Not only did he get that incumbent win, but he came back for the fall race and finished second. And if he won that race, he would have been in the playoffs. But, yeah, just the show of that speed was amazing and hasn't finished outside the top 10 there in, I think, 5 years. So it's just one of his bread-and-butter tracks, it seems like. So I'm going to go with Logano for Saturday.
Guys, I'm going to make a bold prediction. I don't know if he'll get the win in the Xfinity Series race, but, man, biggest turnaround this year, you guys are going to – I'm going to blow your mind.
I know what you're going to say.
Spencer Gallagher.
Yes.
That he's on fire this year. He's sitting eighth in points. He got four top tens. Last year, he only got one, which was in this race a year ago. And he's the most improved driver possibly in all of NASCAR. I mean, I'm high on the Spencer Gallagher bandwagon this year. So he might not get the win, but I think he's up. He's in the Dash for Cash, so maybe $100,000 will come his way. In Cup, I think Denny Hamlin starts the weekend at Langley Speedway with his annual short track event, and I think he ends it at Richmond in Victory Lane. He's very, very good there, as we all know. So, guys, any final thoughts before we sign off for the week?
Our last short track for a little bit here. I love night racing. There's just something about night racing that just fuels my fire a little bit. The cars look faster, they sound louder a little bit, and it's always fun shooting the cars with the sparks. So, gonna be a lot of action, and I'm looking forward to it this weekend.
Mike?
Hate night racing, which we would do away with all night races, except for the All-Star race and the night race at Bristol. Everything else should be in the daytime. Richmond was my favorite track for a long time. Hopefully going to get back to there. I know the team struggled a little bit with the multi-zone tire up there. That has been a work in progress, although last year both the Richmond races were pretty good. So I feel like we're going to have a chance to get back to the old Richmond ways now that they've reworked the infield a little bit and done a lot of improvement up there. My only hope is that we do not have a fan climb on top of the catch fence this time around.
Yeah, I agree with that. I thought the spring Richmond race last year, which was during the day, was one of the best races of the year. It was really, really good. And then the fall race was kind of boring until the end where all hell broke loose. And guys, one thing to look for this weekend, and I don't know how this is going to work, but the Xfinity Series haulers are actually outside the track at Richmond for the first time, I don't know, in a long time, I would imagine. But it'll be cool because they're redoing all the inside, like Mike was saying. So that's something to look out for. Until next weekend, we're scheduled to have a special guest. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag too soon in case it falls through, but we shall see going forward. Guys, until next week where we review Richmond, and where are we going next weekend? Talladega? That'll be a fun one.
Yeah.
We out.
Peace out.